This is the Inner Side Radio Program. I'm your host, Scooter, who is not actually here on this show because he is over at KPFT Pacifica Radio in the heart of the Montrose, Houston, Texas, participating in the fall fund drive, pitching and moaning, raising some money to keep community radio on the air, which is very important. So wherever you are, support your local station, please. Sitting in for me tonight on Not KPFT is From the Vault, hosted by Archbishop of Archives, Brian DeShazer. And this program features the Beat Poets of San Francisco. Take it away, Brian.
Hi, I'm Brian DeShazer, director of the Pacifica Radio Archives. This week on From the Vault, we take a look at the last great literary revolution in America by presenting the Beat Poets of San Francisco. This documentary, produced in 1979 by KPFA and Berkeley producers Lily Franklin and Michael Yoshida, will hear from rare recordings of Jack Kerouac, Allen Ginsberg, Lawrence Ferlinghetti, Lenny Bruce, Kenneth Rexroth, and many others that helped shape the Beat Generation. We'll also hear a special conversation with From the Vault producer Joanne Griffith and Worcester English professor Nancy Grace on the origins and the legacy of the Beat Poets. But first, let's begin with Jack Kerouac from the Pacifica program, The Beat Poets of San Francisco.
In my medicine cabinet, the winter fly has died of old age. Well, here I am, 2 p.m. What day is it? The tree looks like a dog barking at heaven.
The trouble with the printed word is, it is so silent. Let poetry return to its first purpose, the oral message. Let there be a law against writing poetry. It should be spoken, then recorded.
Prayer beads on the holy book. My knees are cold.
Jack Kerouac reading blues and haikus with Zoot Sims on sax and Lawrence Ferlinghetti with aphorisms on poetry. This is a retrospective on the San Francisco beat scene of the late 50s, on the poets and the jazz they loved. We'll hear more from rare recordings of Kerouac and other poets who experimented with a jazz backup for their readings. Jack Kerouac's publication of On the Road in 1956 was a momentous event for the literary scene and the American public. Written about the late 40s and early 50s, it crystallized a vision of the Beat Generation, spinning a tale of mad trips from coast to coast, of New York and San Francisco dives, late-night jazz, reefer, and dreams to replace the disillusionment with America. Kerouac himself is the one to tell us what was meant by the Beat.
Now it's jazz. The place is roaring. All beautiful girls in there. One mad brunette at the bar, drunk with her boys. One strange chick I remember from somewhere, wearing a simple skirt with pockets, her hands in there. Short haircut, slouched, talking to everybody. Up and down the stairs they come. The bartenders are the regular band of Jack and the heavenly drummer who looks up in the sky with blue eyes, with a beard. He's wailing beer caps of bottles and jamming at the cash register, and everything is going to the beat. It's the Beat Generation. It's Bayat. It's the beat to keep. It's the beat of the heart. It's being beat and down in the world and like old-time lowdown. And like in ancient civilizations, the slave boatmen rowing galleys to a beat. And servants spinning pottery to a beat. The faces. There's no face to compare with Jack Mingers, who's up on the bandstand now with a colored trumpeter who outblows him wild and dizzy, but Jack's face overlooking all the heads and smoke. He has a face that looks like everybody you've ever known and seen on the street in your time. Sweet face. Hard to describe. Sad eyes, cruel lips, expectant gleam, swaying to the beat, tall, majestical. Waiting in front of the drugstore. A face like Hunky's in New York. Hunky, whom you'll see on Times Square, somnolent and alert, sad, sweet, dark, holy. Just out of jail. Martyred. Tortured by sidewalks. Starved for sex and companionship. Open to anything. Ready to introduce a new world with a shrug. The colored big tenor with the big tone is blowing Sonny Stitt clear out of Kansas City roadhouses. Clear, heavy, somewhat dull and unmusical ideas which nevertheless never leave the music. Always there, always far out. The harmony too complicated for the motley bums of music understanding in there. But the musicians here. The drummer is a sensational 12-year-old Negro boy who's not allowed to drink, but can play. Tremendous, a little lithe, childlike Miles Davis kid. Like early Fats Navarro fans you used to see in Espan, Harlem, hep, small. He thunders at the drums with a beat which is described to me by a near-standing connoisseur with beret as a fabulous beat. On piano is Blondie Bill, good enough to drive any group. Now Jack Minger blows out and over his head with these angels from Fillmore. I dig him. Now he's terrific. I just stand in the outside hall against the wall. No beer necessary, with collections of in-and-out listeners, with Bernie, and now here returns Bob Berman, who is a kid from West Indies, who barged into my party 6 months earlier with Dean and the gang, and I had a Chet Baker record on, and we hoofed it at each other in the room. Tremendous. The perfect grace of his dancing, casual, like Joe Louis, casually hoofing. He comes now in dancing like that. Glad. Everybody looks everywhere. It's a jazz joint and Beat Generation mad trick. You see someone, hi. Then you look away elsewhere for something, someone else. It's all insane. Then you look back, you look away, around. Everything is coming in from everywhere in the sound of the jazz. Hi. Hey. Bang. The little drummer takes a solo, reaching his young hands all over traps and kettles and cymbals and foot pedal. Boom. And a fantastic crash of sound. 12 years old. What will happen?
Kerouac was one of those poets who died young. Here, in tribute to him, is Allen Ginsberg reading Sunflower Sutra.
I walked on the banks of the tin can banana dock and sat down under the huge shade of a Southern Pacific locomotive to look at the sunset over the box house hills and cry. Jack Kerouac sat beside me on a busted, rusty iron pole companion. We thought the same thoughts of the soul, bleak and blue and sad-eyed, surrounded by the gnarled steel roots of trees of machinery. The oily water on the river mirrored the red sky. Sun sank on top of final Frisco peaks. No fish in that stream. No hermit in those mounts. Just ourselves, roomy-eyed and hungover like old bums on the riverbank, tired and wily. Look at the sunflower, he said. There was a dead gray shadow against the sky, big as a man, sitting dry on top of a pile of ancient sawdust. I rushed up and chanted. It was my first sunflower. Memories of Blake, my visions, Harlem, and hells of the eastern rivers, bridges clanking Joe's greasy sandwiches, dead baby carriages, black treadless tires forgotten and unretreaded, the poem of the riverbank, condoms and pots, steel knives, nothing stainless, only the dank muck and the razor-sharp artifacts passing into the past, and the gray sunflower poised against the sunset, crackly, bleak, and dusty with the smut and smog and smoke of olden locomotives in its eye. Corolla of bleary spikes pushed down and broken like a battered crown, seeds fallen out of its face, soon to be toothless mouth of sunny air, sun rays obliterated on its hairy head like a dried wire spiderweb, leaves stuck out like arms out of the stem, gestures from the sawdust root, broke pieces of plaster fallen out of the black twigs, a dead fly in its ear. Unholy, battered old thing you were, my sunflower, oh my soul, I loved you then. The grime was no man's grime, but death in human locomotives. All that dress of dust, that veil of darkened railroad skin, that smog of cheek, that eyelid of black misery, that sooty hand or phallus or protuberance of artificial worse than dirt, industrial, modern, all that civilization spotting your crazy golden crown, and those blear thoughts of death and dusty loveless eyes and ends and withered roots below in the home pile of sand and sawdust, rubber dollar bills, skin of machinery, the guts and innards of the weeping, coughing car, the empty, lonely tin cans with their rusty tongues, alack, what more could I name? The smoked ashes of some cock cigar, the cunts of wheelbarrows and the milky breasts of cars, all these entangled in your mummied roots. And you there, standing before me in the sunset, all your glory in your form, a perfect beauty of a sunflower, a perfect, excellent, lovely sunflower existence, a sweet natural eye to the new hip moon, woke up alive and excited, grasping in the sunset, shadow, sunrise, golden monthly breeze. How many flies buzzed round you, innocent of your grime, while you cursed the heavens of the railroad and your flower soul? Poor dead flower, when did you forget you were a flower? When did you look at your skin and decide you were an impotent, dirty old locomotive? The ghost of a locomotive, the specter and shade of a once powerful, mad American locomotive? You were never no locomotive, sunflower. You were a sunflower. And you, locomotive, you are a locomotive. Forget me not. So I grabbed up the skeleton-thick sunflower and stuck it at my side like a scepter and deliver my sermon to my soul and Jack's soul too and anyone who'll listen. We're not our skin of grime. We're not dread, bleak, dusty, imageless locomotive. We're beautiful sunflowers inside, blessed by our own seed and golden, hairy, naked accomplishment bodies, growing into mad, black, formal sunflowers in the sunset, spied on by our eyes, under the shadow of the mad locomotive riverbank, sunset, Frisco, hilly, tin can, evening, sit-down vision.
In the morning frost, the cats step slowly. No telegram today, only more leaves fell. Oh, he was quite racy. Real estate queen. Europe and Niles. For pleasure. Stomp, stomp, absolute rays making noise. I can write about them, but I can't punctuate them. Then he said, comma, comma, comma. That skinny guy with black hair. Atlean rage. In India in the last year, he's getting even, ignoring all common publications and getting Urdu nothing Sanskrit by Sir Yak Yak Yak, 40-page thing, Norfolk. Let's all get drunk. I want to take pictures. Don't miss with Mrs. Lately and trust picture pitcher pithy lisp. That's an artistic kit for sex. Trying to think of a rule in Sanskrit, mama Sanskrit sounding, obviously twins coming in here, Meltown, Equinel, Myopa, Pate, Watacha, Pimana, Kawaya. You get sticky ring weekends. And wash the tub, bub. I'll be gentle like a lamb in the Bible. Beautiful color, your lipstick. Thanks, honey. Got a match, Max? Taxi crabs and murder cycles. Let's go to Trilling and ask him. I gotta wash my conduct. Don't worry about nothing. I love Allen Ginsberg. Let that be recorded in heaven's unchangeable heart. Either way, Rapples. Call up so-and-so. Who's that? Sui Delia. And there came the picture of Ang Bong the Bila. Wait, wait for something. The bee slime. Then the ants will crawl over bee land. Ants in bands wailing neath my bloody owl pants. Owl pants. Tadabadi. He thinks I'm competitive in the long pleasant souse of wishing all of ye bleed stay meditation everybody martini destroy my black. Alan, you better voice the stare. This beer, these room sandwiches. Where did you get these? Big greasy socialists. Are you gonna conk, Alan? Mighty tall in the saddle. Anybody got a ciggy boo? The moon is a piece of tea. Under the empty blue sky, vertebrate zoology. Bop began with jazz, but one afternoon somewhere on a sidewalk, maybe 1939, 1940, Dizzy Gillespie or Charlie Parker or Thelonious Monk was walking down past a men's clothing store on 42nd Street of South Main in L.A., and from the loudspeaker they suddenly heard a wild, impossible mistake in jazz that could only have been heard inside their own imaginary head.
You are listening to From the Vault, this week featuring artists from the Beat Generation. For a copy of this program or to browse the other programs in this series, go to FromTheVaultRadio.org or call us at 1-800-735-0230. And now we continue with our program, The Beat Poets of San Francisco, produced in 1979 by Lily Franklin and Michael Yoshida.
A photogenic caper down on the run. They tried to fly like a midnight rainbow high in the sky.
Two things happened during the Beat Generation time. The hucksters couldn't understand it at all. I remember having a conference with a record company, with Laughlin and the New Directions people about marketing Patchen's record. The executives of the company didn't know what they had at all. They didn't know how to sell it. The only thing that was selling at all was this Ken Nordine record, which was to us what Rod McEwen is to Ginsberg, a strictly commercial scene. Steve Allen got the same idea. I don't know how he formed his friendship with Kerouac. I was booked into the Village Vanguard, and Kerouac recruited the gig. They throw you out of the musicians' union for doing something like that, but he went to Max Gordon and recruited the gig. He said it would help build up my show. Well, he was pissy-ass drunk every night, vomited on the piano, and made a general ass of himself. And Max said to me, "Look, I'll buy your contract." Steve was very upset. I said no to Max. Max started out in life as an anarchist poet. Very few people know that. Well, this started a thing. So that in every Greenwich Village coffee shop and bar for about 2 years, all kinds of bums with pawn shop saxophones put together with scotch tape and some other guy with something called poetry were like, you know, blowing poetry, man, dig? And it was absolutely unmitigated. It killed the whole thing. It had a terribly bad effect. There wasn't anything like it in San Francisco because we had done the thing in San Francisco. People knew it. People knew all about it. Even though there was an awful lot of trash at the coffee gallery, but by and large, the music was better, and the poetry was better, too.
Kenneth Rexroth reading excerpts from Thou Shall Not Kill, in memory of Dylan Thomas.
They are murdering all the young men. For half a century now, every day, they have hunted them down and killed them. They are killing them now, at this minute, all over the world. They are killing the young men. They know 10,000 ways to kill them. Every year they invent new ones in the jungles of Africa, in the marshes of Asia, in the deserts of Asia, in the slave pens of Siberia, in the slums of Europe, in the nightclubs of America, the murderers are at work.
Next, we'll hear from former KPFA General Manager Henry Jacobs and Lenny Bruce in character.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'd like you to meet Shorty Pedestine, who is one of the up-and-coming jazz French trumpeters, do they call him, Oscar?
No, man, I blow French horn.
Would you get a little, just a...
Yeah, I blow French horn.
Get a little closer to the microphone.
Yeah.
A little closer, Oscar.
French horn, man.
Uh-huh, French horn.
Yeah.
And what do they call you, a French hornist?
Well, you know, like I blow horn, man.
Would you speak up a little bit, Oscar?
I blow horn, man.
Yeah. Fine. And tell me, how do you like Dixieland, Oscar?
Well, I mean, you know.
Well, what about, would you say, Tchaikovsky?
Yeah, man.
I mean, he grows, you know. Uh-huh.
Man, I mean, I dig more like, you know, Bartok scene or... Shostakovich, uh-huh, or some bit like that, man. Because I mean, I'm more swinging. You know?
Well, how would you compare the kind of music you play with? How would you compare that with art? You know, what kind of art?
Man,
artistic.
I think art blows the most. I mean, he came with a band about 3 years ago, man. Dig, and he was a real small town cat, and I mean he was swinging, man, but he was a small town cat.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, he started to blow with us, and it was a real nut.
And who are you appearing with currently now here in San Francisco?
Well, man, I'm on the show with Stan. You know,
Stan.
My combo, and we're playing with on the same stand with Stan, man.
Uh huh. And how are the crowds receiving you down there?
Yeah, man.
They like it.
Well, I mean, they come, man.
Let's step a little closer to the microphone.
They come, man. They come. They come, man.
A little louder, please.
Yeah, well...
We want the audience to hear everything you have to say.
Oh, yeah.
See, that's, mighty good, drum, what do you call that, riff?
Well, you know... Go on, man.
Now, what are your plans for the future, Osk?
Man, I'm here, and I mean, I've met a swinging group here. I like, uh-huh. I like Frisco the most, man, because, I mean, the town jumps, you know? I mean, there are a lot of scenes, man, and so, I mean, it's like that, you know?
Uh-huh. What would you advise a young artist, a young musician to do? Or would you advise him to get an academic education strive immediately for self-expression?
Well, man, I mean... I'm a musician, dig, and I mean, to me, the most important thing is, like, you should blow, you know? Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, I tried to make it at Juilliard, man, and, it's a real bad scene, you know, man? I mean, it's a bad scene,
bad,
you know?
Bad scene?
Yeah, man, I mean, well, I mean, it's not, you know, like, nothing's happening, you know? I
mean,
these cats don't blow, no.
They don't have any classes
no,
up
man,
there?
Nothing, no, man, nothing's happening, no, man.
Well, I was assured that there was something happening up there in Juilliard.
Well,
they
yeah,
have
I mean,
classes.
Like, sure, they have classes, man, but
they have
I
some
mean,
very fine professors' music.
Well, yeah, but they're too far out, man. They're on this Schoenberg bit and job like that, and I mean, it doesn't swing, you know?
Uh-huh.
I mean, if a cat wants to blow, and he wants to blow, and then he's got to have a scene where he
well,
can blow. And,
yes, well, that would apply to the artists that are playing horns and wind instruments. So they would have to blow. What about those who, are playing string instruments? Or would you say that, how's the picture there?
Well, I mean, you know, it's pretty much all the same, man. A blow is like an instrument, you know?
Blow is like an instrument. Well, perhaps there's some verbal communication that we don't seem to be getting across. How do you say blow is like an instrument?
Well, man, I mean, don't hang me, you know? I mean, like, I didn't want to fall up here in the first place, man. I mean, this is a big bug because, I mean, the... The manager of the band, man.
Well,
I mean,
all right. Well,
I can't make it, man.
Take it easy,
too much. I mean,
look,
you know?
Osk, okay, thanks. You just go over there and sit down with Pops, and we'll listen to the music.
That was actually an interview recorded with former KPFA manager Henry Jacobs and Lenny Bruce.
Joanne Griffith spoke with Beats scholar Nancy Grace, professor of English at the College of Worcester in Worcester, Ohio. Nancy wanted to write her thesis on Jack Kerouac, but was forced to include Kerouac in a broader dissertation containing more acceptable writers.
Let's go back to the beginning, 1950s or late 40s, mm-hmm. early 50s, United States, San Francisco mm-hmm. in particular. Just give us a bit of a potted history mm-hmm. of, you know, the foundation of mm-hmm. the Beat Generation right. as we know it.
Right. Well, it's generally considered to have started around 1944 in New York City when Jack Kerouac went to Columbia University and met Allen Ginsberg there. And then through Ginsberg, he met William Burroughs, and they also met a Times Square junkie named Herbert Hunky, who became kind of this iconic, rebellious underground figure that I think fueled a lot of their imaginative literary work. So it was fundamentally an East Coast development, basically.
But came to be very much associated with San Francisco, didn't it?
It did, right. And San Francisco, on the West Coast, certainly at that time was a much smaller city than it is now. Still had kind of a small town flavor to it. I mean, even though there were quite a few people living there. But it really was kind of on the edge of the world in terms of American culture. And had a long history of literary kind of bohemian communities thriving there because it was so off the beaten path. So the San Francisco Renaissance, which was the 1950s and late 40s, literary revival at the time in San Francisco kind of coincided with what Kerouac and Ginsberg and William Burroughs, as well as John Cleland Holmes, were doing in New York at the time. And then Kerouac, of course, with his cross-country trips, Ginsberg traveling quite a bit. I mean, they migrated out there and made a lot of contacts in San Francisco with the art community out there. Kenneth Rexroth in particular, Robert Duncan and Jack Spicer, many of those poets who were really the prime movers of what's known as the San Francisco Renaissance. So the Beat Generation and the San Francisco Renaissance really blended early on in the 50s.
Now, we often hear that the Beat Generation called different names. Like you've called them the Beats, and then later on, Beatniks.
Right.
What was the importance of how they were titled and how it changed? You know, I even read some places where people were like, well, you know, the Beats, they were just a bunch of bohemian hippies, really.
Right. Yeah, you do find that quite often. Well, the title or the term Beat Generation was developed by Jack Kerouac and John Cleland Holmes, based it off a phrase that Herbert Hunke had actually given them and said, you know, we're this Beat Generation. We're beaten down, we're worn down, you know, World War II, the Depression, the Cold War, you know, just everything in the middle of the 20th century was producing this just very weary, weary generation. So that's how those literary figures looked at it, kind of as a way of characterizing really the emotional content of their entire generation. I think with Kerouac in particular, he had a real, I think, just an affinity for it. And when he went to New York City, you know, that was part of his education, basically outside Columbia, just exploring as many of the kind of underworld places and underground and just kind of soaking in as much of the culture as he could. I think it really complemented his idea of the function of poetry, which was to return to music and song. I mean, he continually spoke about that as something, you know, what artists really needed to do, particularly poets, was to get back to the essential nature of poetry, take it out of the academy, get it into the streets, and take it back to music and song. And I think he found in jazz a real representation of authentic American voices doing that.
And that does it for this week's edition of From the Vault. This series is produced by Brian DeShazer and Mark Torres, and executive produced by the Pacifica Radio Archives and Brian DeShazer. We are now streaming and podcasting online at FromTheVaultRadio.org. Thanks for all the Pacifica listeners who joined our campus campaign and sponsored over 700 schools with our From the Vault series.
Thank you, From the Vault, sitting in this week while we're in Fun Drive at Home Station, KPFT, Pacifica Radio. This and all other Innerside Radio programs are archived in fantastic MP3 computer audio transfigurations for download and uplisten. Simply Google Innerside. It's the first hit. First hit's always free. My name is Scooter, and I'll see you all next week.